The following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Positively Pro-Life, a podcast brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Positively Pro-Life aims to bring you inspirational stories, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm Bonnie Finnerty, Education Director at the Federation, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Maria Gallagher, the Legislative Director. Hello, Maria.
Hello, Bonnie. It's so good to be with you today.
So good to be with you. I know you and I are both incredibly excited about today's show, as we are honored to have a very special guest. The Most Reverend Nelson J. Perez, Archbishop of the Diocese of Philadelphia, will join us in a few moments to share his pro-life beliefs and insights. We are so honored that he found time in his very busy schedule to talk with us. Also, on today's show, Maria will provide critical information on the life-saving amendment to the Pennsylvania Constitution. But first, we'll begin with some pro-life inspiration. In just 9 days, the annual March for Life will be held in Washington, D.C., bringing together hundreds of thousands of pro-life activists from around our country, calling for the end to legalized abortion, which has claimed 63 million American lives, more than all our wars combined since 1973. If you've ever been to the march, as both Maria and I have, you know it is a powerful event to see so many people, particularly young people, but people of all ages from diverse backgrounds and faraway states, braving the January cold, the rain, the snow, the wind, whatever might be thrown at them, braving any possible situation. Why? Because they want to bear witness to their deeply held belief that every single life is precious and should be protected from the moment of conception. Now, mainstream media barely reports that on anymore, but the March for Life is a huge event and an amazing life-affirming experience. But where did this March for Life that has seen exponential growth since its inception in the early 1970s come from? How did it originate? Well, the answer lies with one person, one brave woman, one dedicated soul, and her name is Nellie Gray. According to the March for Life website, when Nellie learned of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton decisions that invalidated all state abortion laws, she was working in Washington, D.C. as a lawyer for the federal government. She lamented the tragic loss of life that would ensue, and she decided that something needed to be done to commemorate the Roe decision and to remember the babies deprived of the right to life. Meeting with a small group of pro-life advocates in her home, Nellie planned a one-time march around the U.S. Capitol that drew 20,000 people. Afterward, when it became clear that the law would not be overturned immediately, Nellie and her group incorporated as a nonprofit, and she gave up her job as an attorney to lead the organization and to plan the annual march that we still see going strong today. Although Nellie Gray passed away in August of 2012, she leaves a mighty legacy, one of passionate and unwavering commitment to the idea that life without exception, without conditions, is always sacred, is always to be protected from the sanctity of the womb to the natural end of life. Fierce and uncompromising on these grounds, Nellie Gray is often referred to as the Joan of Arc of the pro-life movement. She once said, "We will be here until we overturn Roe v. Wade. And believe me, we are going to overturn Roe v. Wade." As we near this year's March for Life on January 21st, it seems we may be closer than ever. And we owe much thanks to one woman who has been instrumental in building a culture of life, the courageous Nellie Gray. Maria.
Bonnie, thank you so much for that inspirational update. It is vitally important that Pennsylvanians contact their state representative and state senator and urge them to support the Life Amendment. This constitutional amendment would ensure that there is no right to taxpayer funding of abortion, and no so-called fundamental right to abortion under the Pennsylvania Constitution. The amendment has been introduced in the Pennsylvania Senate as Senate Bill 956. If you don't know who your state lawmakers are, or you need contact information, just go to the PA Legislative Alert section of our website at www.paprolife.org, and you can send a message to your legislators quickly and efficiently. The constitutional amendment is necessary because the abortion industry has filed a lawsuit, now before the state Supreme Court, demanding Medicaid-funded abortions and a right to abortion under the PA Constitution. The Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation has filed an amicus or friend of the court brief with the High Court to try to stop this. But if the abortion industry prevails, your hard-earned tax dollars could end up paying for abortion unless we have a constitutional amendment to stop it. The Life Amendment is also needed to protect laws such as the Abortion Control Act, which bans late-term abortions and sex selection abortions. It also requires a 24-hour waiting period for abortion, informed consent prior to abortion, and parental consent for abortion. The amendment would also protect our abortion center regulation law, which ensures regular inspections of abortion facilities. Prior to that law being enacted, hair and nail salons in PA faced greater scrutiny than abortion centers. The law was passed in the wake of the Kermit Gosnell tragedy, where Gosnell was accused of murdering hundreds of newborn babies in his House of Horrors abortion center in West Philadelphia. Gosnell is now serving 3 consecutive life terms in prison for murdering 3 newborn babies. He was also convicted of causing the death of a female immigrant patient, Karnamaya Mongar. So for the health and safety of pregnant women and their babies throughout the Commonwealth, please urge your state representative and state senator to pass the Life Amendment. The amendment must pass both the PA House and the PA Senate in 2 consecutive sessions. Then voters must approve it once it appears on the Pennsylvania ballot. Bonnie?
Thanks so much for that update, Maria. It is my pleasure at this time to introduce our guest. Nelson J. Perez was born in Miami, Florida on June 16, 1961, and raised in West New York, New Jersey. After graduating from Montclair State University in 1983, he entered St. Charles Borromeo Seminary in Philadelphia, where he earned Master of Divinity and Master of Arts in Theology degrees. He was ordained a priest for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia in 1989, serving in several capacities throughout the Archdiocese before being named Auxiliary Bishop of the Diocese of Rockville Center in New York in 2012. In 2017, Pope Francis appointed Bishop Perez to be the 11th Bishop of the Diocese of Cleveland, and in 2020, Pope Francis appointed him the 14th Bishop and the 10th Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. He was named by the Pope to the Pontifical Commission for Latin America, which advises and helps churches in Latin America on behalf of the Roman Curia at the Vatican. Archbishop Perez's pastoral vision is rooted in Pope Francis's apostolic exhortation, the joy of the gospel, and can be summarized as church on mission, proactive, involved, supportive, fruitful, and joyful. It is truly a privilege to speak with the Archbishop today. Welcome, Archbishop Perez.
Thank you so much, Bonnie Maria, for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Archbishop, how did you come to hold your pro-life views?
I think it's rooted in my family, you know, in a home that was deeply Catholic and in a culture that respects family and respects life. So it's not that I came to hold them as if like I didn't have them and then I came to hold them, right? So I can't remember coming to hold them because I always held them. Right? So it's not that I came to that from a place in which I did not have them. It was rooted in the way I was raised and brought up and the value of life and family. It runs through the fabric of my spirituality, as well as my culture, and as well as my family culture. So that's why I would say I didn't come to hold them. They were always there.
Archbishop, the issue of abortion is very much in the news today. Can you explain the Catholic Church's teaching on abortion?
Well, the Catholic Church's teaching on abortion, probably the most clear statement of any that the church makes, right? Because it is so clear that it becomes even a political issue, which is not a political issue. So to me, abortion is not a political issue, it's a moral issue. It's an issue of morality. And that teaching of the church is rooted in the sanctity of life, that from natural conception to natural death, and everything that happens in between, right? So it's not just about biological life and death, it's about the respect for the dignity of the human person, whether it be in the womb as a newly conceived human person, or somebody laying on a deathbed, right? That doesn't seem to have value anymore because they can't do the things that you and I do. And I think what's at the root of the church's teaching is that life is sacred and valuable regardless of how we view it, and that it is not our call, right? Mm-hmm. It is not our call to do with life what we want to do with life. Even with my own body, it's not my call because it's a gift that I have for a while. I'm a steward of it, not an owner of it. And I think that is at the root, that life is a gift that began with God, and he chooses to collaborate with us in that gift of life. But at the end, he gives the gift of life, and we are no one. We are out of our league and out of our lane when we start playing around with what is the most sacred of God's creation, which is life.
Very well said.
I think it's rooted in that it's not for us, that's not our call. It's not for us to go play in, right? It's that it's a Garden of Eden all over again, right? You know, you got this whole playground, go knock yourself out, but don't go over there. That's not your call. You don't decide what's good and what's evil. God does.
Mm-hmm. Well said. So what do you see as being some of the consequences in society of abortion on demand?
That life has become cheap. Life is cheap. Here in Philadelphia, last year we had over 500 homicides, right? In addition to, I believe, 12,000 abortions just in the city of Philadelphia, in one city, right? And it's both spectrums, right? You got abortion on demand, 12,000 human beings, ended, their lives were ended, right? And 500 homicides. I think the consequence of playing around with the gift of life is that we've lost respect for life, right? Whether it's in the womb or whether it's on the street, we've lost respect for life, and we see it all around. So I think the consequences of the ruling, of the legal ruling and definition of life, the way the culture and the law did it, has affected the way we even respect each other. I would say life has become cheap and disposable.
Archbishop, how have you seen the church coming to the aid of pregnant women in difficult circumstances?
I think it's obvious that the church, in big ways and in small ways and in pockets and ways that people don't even see, constantly come to the aid of women who fall into difficult circumstances, that might be contemplating an abortion because they feel that they have no other alternative, that they have no other out. And it, you know, one thing is to give a woman like that a moral talk. Another thing is to grab her hand and walk with her and help her to bring that child to life and to term, because the child already has life, but to bring it to full term, right? And there's all sorts of organizations in the city and in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. There's a wonderful organization that basically gives women the opportunity to have a sonogram. I visited two of their places. One of them sits across from the abortion mill in Center City. Beautiful ministry. And they walk and connect with women in difficult circumstances that have been abandoned in their pregnancy, to try to connect them with organizations through Catholic Social Services and other pro-life and loving and caring organizations that say, yeah, we believe in life, and we're going to help you to bring that life to full term and to enter the world. We're not just going to give you a moral talk. We're going to walk with you. And of course, we're blessed in the city of Philadelphia with having the Sisters of Life. And I've engaged with them directly. I can't speak about individuals, but I have one person in mind who I engage with them with. And this woman has given birth to her child, and that child, at one point, didn't have much of a chance to survive.
Well,
organizations and people and individuals and parishes and ministries. One of the things that's frustrating about the Catholic world is that we do a lot of good, but we also believe, I think institutionally and in the Catholic heart, that gospel value of not letting your right hand know what the left hand is doing.
Yeah, I think one of the wonderful things about the Catholic Church and about what the Catholic bishops are doing now is that promise to walk with the woman through her pregnancy. I mean, right. It's one thing to offer a woman a pamphlet, but it's another thing to journey with her, mm-hmm. as she struggles and eventually triumphs. And I think that that's remarkable, that as a church, the pledge has been made to any pregnant woman, we will help you.
I've been involved in situations directly like that. And I have to be honest, I have two or three women that I've actually walked with and took them to medical appointments and all sorts of stuff because they had nobody else. And when I had the initial contact with them, while of course I would not believe in even considering it as an alternative, but putting myself in her shoes at that moment in time, I could understand. I could understand how one could come to a painful conclusion that I have no other choice when they actually do, right? When they actually do, but I could understand, I could sympathize that in moments of desperation when you're alone and you don't know where to go and you're stuck, that you could contemplate even the worst.
Yes. On that note, Archbishop, is there hope for someone who has had an abortion or someone who has assisted in one?
There's always hope, because our God is a God of second chances, and our God is a God of redemption, and our God is our God of forgiveness. There is always hope. There is always hope. The very first founders of the church were the apostles, right? And they were a motley crew. Most of the time, they really didn't get Jesus. And you can see that in the Gospels, where Jesus is like frustrated. You know, he had just finished at one point talking about the fact that he would suffer and die and rise. And then he looks at them and they're arguing about who's the most important. And I'm sure Jesus looked at them and said, are you kidding me? I just poured my heart out to you and you're talking about who's going to sit on my right or on my left? And he says to them, you don't even know what you're asking. At the end of the day, they all ran for the hills, right? One betrayed him, one denied him, and the rest disappeared. And while we oftentimes think that the beloved disciple is John, the gospel doesn't name the beloved disciple. It just says he was the beloved disciple. We've assumed that in tradition. But oftentimes, the beloved disciple is the one who stays by the cross. And you know who stayed by the cross? The women. The women stayed by the cross. We ran away from the hills, but God was merciful, right? And when he shows up behind closed doors, he didn't give them a sermon. He didn't castigate them. The first words out of his mouth after the resurrection was peace, which means, comes from that word shalom, right? That you may be made whole in the eyes of God. And so what is God's desire for someone who has procured an abortion or helped in that process? That they be made whole. And organizations and movements and opportunities like Project Rachel do exactly that, right? They try to bring healing that oftentimes comes years later. Comes years later, they carry the pain. They carry that pain around, and but God's grace sometimes encounters them. And is there hope? Undoubtedly, there's hope.
Can we shift to the other end of the life spectrum and talk about church teaching regarding doctor-prescribed suicide or euthanasia? What does the church teach on those topics?
Well, it's all connected that we are not the masters of life. It is not our call. And we are dabbling in places that we shouldn't dabble. And the consequences are great. And in a sense, it's totally connected, right? Because the abortion movement had to somehow justify their action, right? And so that's why they even changed it. They don't call themselves the pro-abortion people anymore. It became pro-choice. Who could be against choice, especially in the United States, right? Right? Though that's kind of an illusion, right? There are choices that we don't have. It is not my choice whether I go through the red light or not. That is not my call, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a consequence for going through the red light. It is there for a reason. And of course, if you're going to say that embryo or that zygote in the womb of a woman is not life because it can't sustain itself, it doesn't look like life, it doesn't have the characteristics of a personhood, well then it goes to the other spectrum, to the other end of the spectrum, so that a person that can't function independently of a machine or function independently because or can't be productive in society for some reason, that then we could actually wipe them off too, right? Wipe them off too. So the church's position on assisted suicide and euthanasia is as strong as it is at the other end of the spectrum. And everything in between, right? Because we have to respect life in each other and in those who are on the periphery of life as well. We have to respect life in all at every moment and in every stage and in every circumstance if we're going to be respectful of life, right? But unfortunately, it's an evil consequence of what we defined that in the womb. What we defined that in the womb eventually ended up now that at the under end of the spectrum, if you're not useful anymore, all you do is cost money. I had a woman who called me to the hospital. I'm not going to say here in Philadelphia when I was a priest. her child had been born with severe medical issues. And the doctor basically said to this woman that the money and the effort and the time that they would spend, the child was on life support, it would be a waste of money and a waste of time, because there would be nothing, the kid's gonna die anyway, so you might as well just pull the plug and make it happen now, right? That kid today is 20 years old.
Wow, wow.
Right? That kid today is 20 years old. Why? Because doctor, it wasn't your call. It was not your call. It was God's call. And I remember going to the hospital and the woman's crying and the doctor says that the only thing we could do is pull the plug. Because the doctor gave her absolutely 0, 0, 0 hope. And I said, let the child die naturally. When that's God's call, that's not this guy's call. The kid's 20 years old now.
Remarkable. Archbishop, we have just about a minute or so left. Do you expect Roe versus Wade, the 1973 U.S. Supreme Court decision, which legalized abortion, to be overturned?
That's a legal question, and I'm not a lawyer. I could speak as a person of faith that that is my hope and my prayer. As far as the legal aspect of that and the Supreme Court, that would be my hope, but I can't answer it that way because I'm not a lawyer. And I don't know how those processes work. At the end, I'm a man of faith, and I hope that at some point God's justice will intervene.
Most definitely. Archbishop Nelson Perez of Philadelphia, it's been such a wonderful pleasure to have you on the podcast. And please keep fighting the good fight on behalf of both the preborn and the people with disabilities and also people at the end of the life spectrum.
And especially for women that are confronting moments of desperation, that God will send them the angels that they need.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Positively Pro-Life is made possible through the generous support of the members of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation all across the Commonwealth. Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is the largest single-issue pro-life organization in the Keystone State, with more than 40 local county-based chapters. Thanks for joining us. And remember, there's always a reason to choose life.